AM Amory and WBZH 910 AM W245 CT Hayward.
Always streaming on the Civic
ABC
Media
News,
app.
I'm Rena Roy. David Weiss, the prosecutor in the Hunter Biden investigation, granted special counsel status by Attorney General Merrick Garland.
I am confident that Mr. Weiss will carry out his responsibility in an even-handed and urgent manner and in accordance with the highest traditions of this department.
Hunter Biden is accused of tax nonpayment and felony gun charges. Maui Mayor Richard Bisson says the devastating wildfires have left the historic town of Lahaina looking like a war zone.
Cars in the street, doors open, melted to the ground. Most structures no longer exist, and for blocks and blocks of this.
More than 1,000 structures were destroyed. At least 55 people have been killed. Republican presidential hopefuls are at the Iowa State Fair today and this weekend to charm voters in the first caucus state. This is ABC News. An Illinois Supreme Court decision allows a ban on assault weapons to stand.
The Illinois Supreme Court ruled that a lower court erred in finding the state's ban on assault weapons unconstitutional. Today's 4-3 decision reinstates a law that bans dozens of rifles and handguns, most notably the AR-15 rifle. This law was prompted by last July's mass shooting at a 4th of July parade in suburban Chicago. And while it's back on the books, it does face ongoing challenges in federal courts. Brian Clark, ABC News.
Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas is accused of taking even more luxury trips and gifts from billionaires than previously believed. ProPublica reporting Thomas accepted at least 38 vacations, 26 flights on private jets, and a dozen VIP passes to sporting events. 14,000 people evacuated from a town in eastern Poland so military experts could remove an unexploded bomb. Officials say the device was successfully removed. Rena Roy, ABC News.
Here's what you need to know in northwestern Wisconsin. Barron County officials said the Marathon County Bomb Squad was called in to get rid of dynamite found near Rice Lake on Wednesday. The Sheriff's Department said an outbuilding had to be destroyed as well due to it containing materials that could easily catch on fire or explode. According to a release, the property owners had no idea there was dynamite in the outbuilding. A Cumberland man was sentenced to 4 years of probation for stealing rebate checks while he worked as a mail carrier. Joshua Kopis is accused of swiping 30 Menards rebate checks totaling $4,500 from people on his route. Kopis pleaded guilty to mail theft by a postal employee and will have to pay all of the money back. A Neillsville man was sentenced to prison for killing a highway worker while he was driving drunk. Neumuller will spend 10 years in prison for killing Russell Opelt and seriously injuring David Murphy while they were working to remove a tree in the road near Greenwood in 2021. Neumuller pleaded guilty to the charges of homicide and causing injury by intoxicated use of a vehicle back in April. For Civic Media News, I'm Jimmy Kuska.
Did you know the Wisconsin State Fair is 172 years old? It still celebrates the industries important to our state's history, like agriculture. But every year, new attractions and items are added. This year, there's more than 100 new foods to try. So what do you think topped the culinary list last year? Flamin' hot Cheetos chicken on a stick? Deep-fried old-fashioned? Or Pino pretzel popper brat? The answer's coming up. The Wisconsin State Fair didn't start in its current home of West Alice. The first was in Janesville along the Rock River, then moved to different locations the next 40 years. The original cream puff has been around almost as long, close to 400,000 are gobbled up every year. So which food was number one last year? It was the Pino pretzel popper brat. It came out on top. The State Fair is a true slice of Wisconsin, and it runs through August 13th. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Larry, it's your mom. Did you know the Civic Media Network covers the whole state of Wisconsin? They can help your business get the word out, whether you want to reach a smidge of folks or just want the whole kit and caboodle. Call 608-819-8255. Okay then, bye.
Hey, this is Penny Pincher Mom, and I love a good rummage sale. If you love them too, you can list your Saturday rummage sale right here on this radio station. Your 15-second Saturday rummage sale ad runs Friday all day and Saturday morning for only $50 per week. If you would like to list your Saturday rummage sale, call us now, 715-629-9501. The deadline for each week is Wednesday at noon. Operators are standing by now. Please have a valid credit card ready to go. See ya!
Whether it's a picnic in the park or a cool, easy dinner when it's too hot to cook, sandwiches in summer go together like peanut butter and jelly. And
there's Minneapolis. Find their menu and more at scotchamamas.com.
Portions of the following program may be pre-recorded.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show for your Friday. Good to be with you today, Matt and Patrick here today. Hi, Patrick. How are we?
Doing pretty well. Doing pretty well today. How are you?
It's been a busy week because because we had the COVID scare, I couldn't go up to the cabin this last week. And my mom was supposed to go up to the cabin on Tuesday. She was in town. She was going to go on up. So I ended up having to run around a lot with her and, kind of got things a lot real busy. I've been able to kind of just calm down a little bit today, but it's been a hectic week, man. How about you? Is things going well? Are you just basically lamenting the twins stinking up the joint again?
Well, no, it was a little bit of that hectic week that you sort of mentioned. So I was out of here the last couple of days. So Wednesday, I took my car in to have the brakes looked at. They said, after I'd been there already for a couple hours, they said, hey, it's going to be better off if you come back tomorrow. We'll have the parts we need to take care of this. So I spent the bulk of two afternoons sitting in the auto shop, which is never fun.
No, it's in hours you will not get back in your life. But the real question here is, you work here and you can afford a car? I'm joking. Wow. Things have changed since I was started off in radio. What do you mean I need to find an apartment within a few blocks of the station? I do have an update. Oh, by the way, I do want to make sure I mention coming up a little bit later on this hour, Brian Fullman. He is a lead organizer with Isaiah. He's going to be joining us today. Big year already for them because of the renewing of the voting rights for a lot of people in the state of Minnesota. We'll talk to Brian about that coming up here this hour. 952-946-6205. So this is a story, I don't know if you were here or it was Brett here. We covered this a little bit earlier about the people that were going to casinos with like TikTok and had someone watching while they played slots and were playing slots for them, which is wildly illegal to do, by the way. Before you think to yourself, you can make some money doing this. Do you remember this story? Were you here for that?
I think this was Brett because I do not remember this.
So
at all.
The concept is this: I'm guessing. Do you remember Dave Osborne on Arrested Development? He was walking around as the advocate, where he had a camera and a microphone, and he was pretending to be George Senior when on all the meetings. It's kind of like that you walk into a casino with a camera and a microphone, and it's like, play this machine. Play this machine now. I'm going to play this machine. All right, double down. Okay. But you're not doing it for someone locally. You're doing it for some place where gambling might be illegal or someone who can't legally gamble or something like this. I think this is that story because it's finally starting to come to fruition. And a Dynaman and his brother were charged on Friday with Twin Cities area casinos and playing slots for gamblers who paid to have their bets placed, then watched live on TikTok in their hopes of striking it rich. Blake Fitzgerald, 40, was charged in Scott County District Court with three gross misdemeanors. He's alleged to have run a remote bookie business. I mean, technically, I guess that's the where they get you on this one, is that you're a bookie. For at least 4 months until January, while at Mystic Lake in Prior Lake or Treasure Island just outside of Red Wing, in violation of a law that prohibits placing bets on behalf of someone else. State officials say they also detected Fitzgerald carrying out the same venture in a Detroit casino months earlier. Nicole Roddy, a spokesperson for the Minnesota Alcohol and Gambling Enforcement Division, said earlier this year that prior to the case, they have no other cases of this nature reported to them. The American Gambling Association, which represents sports books and casinos across the country, also says it has never heard of such a gambling scheme. And I want to go back to one thing that happened when I've gone to Vegas. If I go to a casino, I like going to a sports book. Because you can sit there and watch every game. You generally don't need to gamble. You can if you want to. I just go there and sit and watch the game. But if you pull a phone out, immediately security is, and they're very polite. They're saying, I'm sorry, sir, you can't use your cell phone in the sports book because they don't want people placing bets for other people. And so you just, it's kind of one of those, but you see, that's part of the appeal for it for me is that I can put the phone away. I can't look at my phone. I can just sit here, enjoy every sporting event that's going on at any given time within the country and sit there and do it because they do not want people placing bets for people who are not there. Have you ever seen that, you know, before?
I actually have not. Most of my sports, the people who I watch sports with are not really a whole lot into the whole betting thing. We kind of joke about it for fun, but we're just not super deep into
that. Some people, man, they'll bet on everything. I think that's a bad sign. Me personally, I mean, outside of like community pots or like fantasy football or the office pool, I've never done anything. I'm not like rolled in and dropped 100 on, you know, the Dodgers are going to win tonight or something like that, you know?
Yeah, I actually, not to take this away too far from port, but last night I made an observation that there were betting lines on the Vikings preseason game. And I'm like, and I commented on Twitter, I said, that is blind faith. You don't even know 80% of the people who are going to be playing in this game, and you're hoping they make you money.
If you have to bet on a professional JUCO game, man, dude, what are you doing? Because that's all that is. It's a professional JUCO game. Maybe these guys will eventually get to Division I football, but dear Lord. Hey, by the way, good to see the Vikings starting off with the old-fashioned there. I mean, it was all backup players, but still. Anyway. Back to this story. At times, his younger brother was involved as a moderator with the video hookups. Christopher, were you doing a play-by-play? Is this like the Manning brothers? You're doing a play-by-play on the TikTok videos of your brother gambling in a casino for someone else. Wow. This world is going off the freaking rails. Can I just say this? This is going off the rails. According to the criminal complaints and other court documents, Fitzgerald was collecting through Cash Apps an initial $5.99 subscription fee and then $25 that he keeps for every $100 deposited for wagering, which he streams live on the video sharing app TikTok. God, how did people figure this out, huh? How did people figure out your crime? Archive videos of the man's main TikTok account reveal 165,000 followers from around the world. Video highlights show wads of cash being displayed and slot machines rolling up occasional big jackpots, including one in December that topped $15,000. More than 100 people sent roughly $65,000 to Fitzgerald for betting during a one-month-long stretch late last year. In the same period, he sent them back about $27,700 in either gambling winnings or refunds if his time betting had run out. Administrators at both casinos caught on to Fitzgerald's TikTok bookie business. On January 12th, he spoke over a live stream about being kicked out of Mystic Lake during a previous visit. That same day, he was in his car outside Treasure Island and said he had just been given a permanent trespass notice. The AGED caught on to the out-of-bounds enterprise thanks to tips from someone in Vegas and a woman who was the mother of a 16-year-old from Pennsylvania who caught wind of the TikTok boogie the night of January 11th, just before her son sent money into gamble. 16 years old. There you go. You know, I've said this. I said this when we had poll tabs, electronic poll tabs, all these things. It's a slippery slope. Now, I'm going to just say this. I don't have any problem with the Native America casinos because, I mean, that's their property. They operate outside of the realms of the federal government. So, I mean, they can do what they want because, well, frankly, they're owed a heck of a lot more than that. But at the same time, that's their territory. They want to do that. They're more than welcome to. That is what their right is. But when it comes to, like, the electronic pull tabs, you know, for the Viking Stadium or you know, when it comes to the idea of the sports betting where, no, we have to put it into Canterbury and Running Aces. You know, it's a slippery slope, man, in the sense being is that it just eventually it will get to the point where I think that within 20, 25 years, you will see video slot machines in every gas station. I think they'll be every. It'll be like Europe. Have you ever been to Europe? some of the countries in Europe?
I have not been to Europe, sadly.
In some of the countries in Europe, every gas station, every fast food restaurant, there's every bar, there's video gaming machines in there.
It is like that in Nevada here in the United States.
Yes, it is like that in Nevada. Nevada is Nevada, man. Nevada is Nevada. I really do. I don't have any problem. If the Native American casinos want to do it, they can do it. I just don't know if it's a good thing. And the reason why is this sort of thing, because I guarantee you right now, as we read the story, as this story is being reported, you think that this is a deterrent? Please. They're trying to figure out a way that they can do this where it's not. I mean, let's face it. These people, the stupid part of these people is that they posted the evidence of their crimes right on social media and acted like, gee, Willikers, how did they track us down? Batman says you wrote down your evil plan on this piece of paper. So, you're going to jail. That's how it works.
I don't even know why you would want to do this for someone else, because let's say you win, a five-figure prize. Like, oh, but that's John's five-figure prize. That's not mine. I mean, that'd just be kind of like, well, why am I doing this again?
Well, I can tell you. Let me just run those numbers again. In 1 month, he did this for 4 months, apparently. In 1 month, he took in $65,000. He sent back $27,000 in either gambling winnings or refunds, which means Matt's Math Corner takes a little dive here. A little less than $40,000 that month alone in revenue as a bookie for gambling.
Okay. No, so he actually was doing pretty well for himself, even if not legal.
Yeah, and he was making some money there. And, great. I mean, I imagine you got 16-year-olds. What do you bet there's a 12-year-old out there that probably threw some money in there? And stuff like this. Come on. And of course, one of the things which is really amazing is there are some countries on the planet where gambling is really cultural. But they love gambling. I mean, I was the Mega Millions was just up to, $1 billion plus. There was estimated something like a third of the tickets were bought by people, with surrogates here in the United States from other countries that were trying to buy this. I mean, it's just America, the people come here and they want to gamble and they want to do these things. And, the reality is that we have laws that prevent people from sitting in their house in a foreign country and basically calling up some dude from Edina and saying, I want you to run down to Mystic Lake and start playing the Michael Jackson video poker machine. And see how much coin we can make. I mean, there's a reason behind it. I will say, one thing about Vegas, which I will say, we would walk through the casino when I was out there a year ago. I was there with the kids, and my son is 21. My other two daughters, though, were under the age. And we would walk through the casinos, which no one has a problem with you doing. But if you stop and start watching the games, they do come over to you and say, I'm sorry, you can't, are these kids overage? No, they're not. Well, like you can't stay here. They do seem to have some, and I got to be careful there because, I'm given a lot of soft zone here. But yeah, in Vegas, they don't, I kind of get the impression that they do a kind of a little bit better job of this, but at the same time. It's gambling, man. And yeah, there as much as we can criticize it, the reality is there really, unless I play fantasy football, and stuff like that, the pick'em challenges, the NCAA Final Four bracket, you do that stuff. I think anything beyond that kind of starts getting destructive real fast. But that's just me, in regards to, the desire to do these things. There's a lot of people that like doing them. So 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Let's take a break. I'll come back. We'll rehash a story or two when we get bored. And then once again, coming up here in just a little bit from Isaiah, it's Brian Fullman's going to be joining us. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
Next time on Philosophy Talk, what has replaced Freud?
Sigmund Freud popularized the idea that we can have unconscious thoughts and desires.
But Freud was certainly no scientist, and his particular views have mostly been abandoned.
So are newer theories about automatic systems or implicit attitudes any more scientific?
Or are you just saying that because you hate your father?
What has replaced Freud? Next time on Philosophy Talk.
Philosophy Talk, every Sunday at 8 a.m. on AM 950. The place for summer fun is the Park Tavern. Live music is taking over the Park Tavern's dog-friendly patio this summer. Head over on Tuesday, August 15th for Carl Davis. Wednesday, August 16th, it's Ash St. John's. And on Thursday, August 17th, it's Three Dragons. Music runs from 5:30 to 8 p.m. and reservations for groups of 8 or more are recommended. And the Park Tavern offers private and semi-private spaces for small and large groups with no room fees and no minimum spending requirements. On Louisiana Avenue, north of Highway 7 in St. Louis Park, get your summer groove on at the Park Tavern.
Hey, it's Tom. Fossil fuels continue to have negative impacts on our environment. Luckily, there are more ways now than ever to use renewable energy in your home or business. All Energy Solar offers smart energy solutions like custom solar paneling, electric vehicle chargers, and energy storage. Solar panel systems can last for decades, meaning you can help the environment and cut back on electric bills for years to come. There are incentives and rebates available to most people who install solar energy, too. Last year, the federal solar tax credit increased to a 30% tax credit. This incentive can be used in combination with other incentives from your utility, county, or city. But don't delay or miss out, as many of these incentives are limited to only a certain number of people. So have a professional from All Energy Solar help you discover how solar can power up your property while saving on your energy costs. Call 800-620-3370 or visit allenergysolar.com.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. So I want to reiterate what happened with Ricky Cobb. Ricky Cobb was allegedly pulled over for his you know, lights not being on, but in the video footage, it looks like his lights are on. His lights were not working, they said, but it looks like his lights were working. He was pulled over for that. They found that he had a warrant out. They were trying to, he did not have a gun on him. The officers basically demanded him getting out of the vehicle. He's asking, why do I need to get out of the vehicle? He's like, don't ask me questions. Get out of the vehicle. I'm the authority. I'm the God, you know, sort of mentality. I'm not going to answer you, even though you're asking a very reasonable question. We need you to get out of the vehicle. When he basically didn't answer them or get out of the vehicle, they opened the doors of the vehicle and started trying to yank him out of the vehicle. At that point, he put the car into drive. They shot him. The guy, the officer on the passenger side, put three bullets into his torso, and probably he was dead before he even got out. Rolled down the road. The two officers did a barrel roll, got up. The other individual, the driver of the car, Ricky Cobb, was dead. I think there is nothing more disingenuous, frankly, than the video of them. Come on, Ricky, stay with me now. Dude, don't do that. Don't do that. Keep breathing. You just killed him. You pull the trigger on your gun. You got to be expecting someone's dying. So for you to all of a sudden act like we're trying to save his life. No, you killed him. And that's just freaking window dressing. Let's just call it what it is. It's just window dressing. Come on, man. Stay with me. Yeah, he really wants to stay with the guys that just put three rounds into his chest. Good thinking, yeah. Come on, just disingenuous. Of course, the right likes to scream about what could have happened because the hypothetical, the car could have been made out of nuclear bombs and could have blown up and taken out the entire metro. Thank God they murdered him when they did. That's kind of the mentality. And I said this the first day we talked about Ricky Cobb, is that the thing that makes me a little upset is that I kind of get the impression they shot him for convenience. They just didn't want to chase him down later. And so they shot him there, said, you know what? I already got my steps in today, so don't worry. And once again, reality. Two officers did a barrel roll. They got up, little scraped, little bruised. But, you know, trust me, Ricky Cobb got the worst side of this when you killed him. Period. End of story. And I've already said I don't think the officers will be held accountable. This will be considered a legit kill. That's just going to be the way of it. But at the same time, there's a lot of problems with this stop. And anyone who doesn't see that is just wanting police officers to kill black people. And that's kind of how I feel about it. If you don't see the mistakes that the officers made there, and then the come on, man, keep breathing, don't make me, if you stop breathing, I'm going to shoot you again. I mean, they didn't say that. They didn't, but they were kind of screaming at him. I mean, you're the ones that, never mind. Anyway, there is this now, this mentality that unless you're out there saying this is the most righteous killing by a police officer in the history of mankind, that you're against the cops. Please. No, there were mistakes made by those officers, undoubtedly. And by the way, we should note that as Johnny Triggerfinger over there decided to put three rounds into Ricky Cobb, he was firing in the direction of his partner. Nice going, idiot. Anyway, that all being said, once again, there's this narrative that how dare we show any sympathy or empathy for the other side. Now, I know people are going to say, Matt, you're missing the point here, because there's a story I'm about to read that you're missing the point. It's just about, you know, the appearance of fairness. Can I just say this to all police departments? I have been in this town since, back in this town since 2020. I was born here, lived here a good chunk of my life. I moved back here in 2000, and I've been on this radio station for 13 and a half years. I have seen, I've watched the insanely disturbing character assassination job that police departments do on their victims. Gangbanger, druggie. He was going to murder a million people. You guys don't care. You have to turn the victims of your trigger-happy policing into the worst villains of all time. And you do it with aplomb. So please, before you start dictating about making sure people do not go out there and start, you know, looking like they're inappropriate, when you guys basically stop your character assassination machine that happens every time someone is killed by a police officer, well, anytime a black person or a Native American is killed by a police officer, they don't seem to do it nearly as much with the white guys. Let's just be honest about that. Then maybe I'll give your complaint here a little bit more credence. But here you go. Minneapolis Police and Peace Officers Association sent a letter to Governor Walz objecting to the governor's meeting with the family of Ricky Cobb, the man shot multiple times by a state patrol trooper after being pulled over on 94 North in Minneapolis. Walz met with Cobb's family on Wednesday, about a week after Cobb's death. Cobb's family and Walz haven't shared information about what they discussed in the private meeting. But Airman Ali, general counsel for the MPPAO, sent a letter to Walz stating that they're concerned the meeting created a conflict of interest since Walz oversees the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, which is investigating the incident, and the Department of Public Safety, which encompasses the State Patrol. While we understand the family is grieving his death, there are legitimate concerns regarding her involvement and now a relationship and affiliation that could affect the fair and impartial investigation and potential legal challenges deciding in the incident. Wait a second here. You always say your officers are empirical, that they don't make harsh, rash decisions, that they're thoughtful. Now all of a sudden you're saying, well, it's because Governor Walz said something here. Now all of a sudden they're going to let him go. Come on. Body cam footage of the incident shows Cobb repeatedly asking a trooper why he needed to get out of the car. When the troopers tried to remove him from the vehicle, he moved his arm in the direction of the gear shift. Trooper on the passenger side shot him multiple times in the abdomen. Cobb drove off. He later died. Cobb's family last week called on State Patrol to fire the three troopers they said should be charged. They're not going to be fired. They're not going to be commended because they made a lot of mistakes there, but they're not going to be fired. They'll still have their jobs. And once again, the way the state law is written, it's the "I was scared" defense. As long as an officer goes into a courtroom saying, "I was scared," they can basically do everything they want to. They can murder anyone they want to. The MPPAO, which is the state's largest police group, said its letter that the meeting between Walz and Cobb family was private. Walz could have made unknown assurances and determined the rule of law, rights of law enforcement officers, blah, 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 blah. A spokesperson for Walz did not immediately return a request. The MPPAO letter made no mention of whether BCA officials face their own conflict of interest, given that they're investigating an incident involving their fellow employee with the Department of Public Safety. See, conflict of interest, MPPOA. I said AO. MPPOA? It, what's good for the goose? How is it? How can we trust this is going to be a fair investigation? See, and here's where you catch them on the little bit of problem. On one side, they're saying Governor Walz met with the family. Now there's going to be pressure on these people to basically cave to his will. Meanwhile, the same organization that's investigating their own fellow employees, when you bring that up, it's like, hey, how dare you question the integrity of our investigators? Of course they can be fair and impartial. You can't have it both ways there, MPPOA. You can't have it both ways. Either the investigators are fair and empirical, and that there's no problem, there's not going to be any influence by Walz or the fact that they're investigating their fellow employees, or we should have a separate non, you know, maybe a federal government in review of this shooting that is out of your hands. And I guarantee you, if you put that forward to them, that they'll basically, oh, no, I didn't say that. I don't think that's necessary. Christopher Medell, this is out of the Star Tribune version of the story, called those private meetings troubling and inappropriate. Impartial prosecutors are critical. And this is also talking about Mary Moriarty meeting with the family. Impartial prosecutors are critical to the public's confidence in charging decisions following the rule of law. Pardon me a quick second. Freeman and Jaleel Stallings. Once again, Freeman and Jaleel Stallings. Just stop, man. Impartial prosecutors, you guys went up there and said, well, you don't need to see the... At the best case scenario for Freeman was you guys going up there and ensuring him he and his staff didn't need to see the body cam footage, which showed that your entire story was a whole bunch of freaking lies. Please. In his memo to the Hennepin County Attorney's Office, Medell says he remains confident the prosecutors conduct an impartial review. With the evidence, they will conclude that the officer acted not only properly, but heroically. Oh, please. Come on, man. You're going to survive the bullets I just put into you. You're going to... Come on, man. Keep breathing. Disingenuous is the best term I could use for it. A few other words that come to mind, but no. You can't have it both ways. You can't sit there and say, well, the prosecutors are going to conduct an impartial review, but nobody else should ever talk to any of the family because that could influence the review process. What is it? It's one or the other. You can't have it both ways. You can't put your officers, you can't put your fingers on one side of the scale and push down, and when the other side tries to, doesn't even try to put it on there, but just goes out there and tries to console the family that who's lost someone due to a police officer's gun, say, you can't push back down on that other side. So what is it? Are the investigators impartial and going to be able to do their job regardless of what Moriarty or Walz do? Or should they basically be called in, we call in a different organization and have them do the review away from these officers and the MPPOA? I'll wait for you to get back to us on that one. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. When we come on back, Brian Fullman's going to join us from Isaiah, Minnesota. We'll talk to him in just a moment. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
AM 950 Radio is celebrating Minnesota Broadcasters Week of Kindness by highlighting organizations that work tirelessly to strengthen our democracy. This week, we shine a spotlight on Isaiah, Minnesota, a multiracial, statewide, nonpartisan coalition of faith communities fighting for racial and economic justice in Minnesota. This year, they were instrumental in the 20-year struggle to expand the democratic voices of our community. The hard-fought battle culminated in securing the right to vote for 55,000 Minnesotans living on probation or parole. In a triumphant year at the state legislature, that wasn't the only goal Isaiah saw accomplished. Some of the groundbreaking victories included paid time off for all eligible voters on Election Day and throughout the 46-day early voting period, along with 16- and 17-year-olds pre-registration for voting. Isaiah's vision for a more inclusive and empowered democracy materialized in these momentous changes. Find out more about what Isaiah Minnesota is working on next to strengthen our democracy by visiting isaiahmn.org. That's isaiahmn.org.
Think your company's safe? Your staff is working from home, right? As I speak, cyber criminals are mounting attacks across the country. Remember, When we're weakest, cyber criminals attack. Hi, Mark Sommerfeld from Rimark. The Rimark team is guiding our clients through these difficult times. In fact, demand has been so high, we created an easy-to-follow guide. It's yours free. Download our 5 steps to securely work from home now at RimarkIT.com or call 651-328-8900 for a no-cost how-to discussion.
Hey, it's Patrick for Zero Res. Believe it or not, barely a month from now, the kids will be back in school. So while you're getting some fresh looks for your kids before they head back, make sure to get a fresh look for your home, too, with my cleaning heroes at Zero Res. Carpets, tile, rugs, upholstery, basically every surface in your home can be Zero Resified, so it's time to call the cleaning pros at Zero Res. It's also the height of the summer allergy season, so it's the perfect time to get your air ducts cleaned. Get that nasty pollen and dust that's been swirling through your air conditioner out of your home. This month from Zero Res, get 3 rooms of carpet clean starting at just $129 and take $75 off an air duct cleaning. You owe it to yourself, your kids, and your home to get the fall off to a good start. Call Zero Res today, 952-ZERO-RES, or schedule an appointment at ZeroResMinnesota.com. Zero Res, backward or forward, spells the same.
With your AM 950 weather, I'm Brett Johnson. Look for sunny skies today with a high near 86. Tonight, a chance for thunderstorms with a low around 62. And Saturday, sunny with a high around 83. Scotchamamas offers a huge taste out of a little place. Besides their delicious barbecue, they have potato salads, spicy baked beans, twice-baked potatoes, and delicious desserts. Located at 3 West Diamond Lake Road near the intersection of Nicollet Avenue and West Diamond Lake Road in Minneapolis, find their menu and more at scotchamamas.com.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Isaiah, Minnesota is a multiracial statewide nonpartisan coalition of faith communities fighting for racial and economic justice in Minnesota. Joining us right now is Brian Fullman. He's a lead organizer and barbershop and black congregation cooperative. That's his specialty there. He's kind enough to join us today to talk about some of the positives we've had in regards to voting rights here in Minnesota in this last legislative cycle. Brian, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate you, Matt.
My absolute pleasure. First of all, why don't you take some time and explain to everyone out there a little bit better than I did exactly what is Isaiah Minnesota?
Yeah, so Isaiah is a nonprofit organization. It's a faith-based nonprofit organization, and our theory of change is grassroots organizing. So we want to make sure that we are filling in the disparity gaps and inequities that a lot of us in the state of Minnesota are faced with day to day. So we do that by building out relationships within the communities, and then we all leverage those relationships with each other in the political arena to get better policy to fit the equities, to fit the inequities that we see every day in the community. So we do that across statewide. We are everything from churches, mosques, barbershops, childcare centers, small businesses, you name it, we organize. But our bread and butter is the congregations. And so since the origin of Isaiah, we have organized churches across the state of Minnesota for 20 plus years.
God bless on that. So, I mean, one of the things that's really interesting here is that, having followed politics for many years, you know, it's kind of like you're laying tile in the bathroom. There's always these cracks and gaps that are there, and they've exist. And frankly, they've existed for the minority communities and the lesser represented communities on a much larger scale here. Has Isaiah had a lot of success being able to fill in those gaps, considering they are wide and pretty persistent?
We have been very successful in organizing and filling in those gaps. I think the democracy work that we're doing is a perfect example of that. I first want to say, though, that it was so many people who organized around making sure that all of our voices are being heard, whether you have been formerly incarcerated or not. They've been doing this work for 20 years, but we have always stood in the gap. When you're talking about the struggles and the inequities and oppression that a lot of our minority communities are faced with. So, again, restore the vote, early voter registration are some of the ways that we've done some real structural change to kind of close and fill in that gap.
I do want to ask a little bit about your specialty here, because you're a lead organizer focusing on barbershops and Black congregations. It's interesting how Isaiah has broken down this outreach program, because it really has gotten into the heart of the communities that are misrepresented or underrepresented, I should say. And you know, I imagine for you, it's a great way for you to get into these organizations that might not have that say, and give them that say through the barbershops and the Black congregations.
Yes, so it's a platform. I was a barber for 18 years, and I understood that a lot of the freedom that people would feel while they were in the barbershop, they felt a sense of safety. They was able to imagine what was possible for them inside of the barbershops, amongst their own peers and community. But I would also notice when people would leave those barbershops, they would kind of hunker back down, almost. You can almost see how the demeanors would change. Like, okay, it's time to go back to business. It's time to go back to work and keep my head down. So I knew it was a very, very important and powerful platform to begin organizing from. When I got hired in Isaiah, and I volunteered for 3 years with Isaiah before I got hired, they were already organizing, you know, Black churches, white churches, Latino brothers and sisters, congregations. So that was already in the fix. What I wanted to do was actually add some flavor and a constituency base program to Isaiah. And the one thing about us as Isaiah, and the reason why we've had so many breakthroughs, is that we get space to learn, we get space to make mistakes, it's embraced, and we learn. So it's just a different culture around, you know, a right to learning and a right to make mistakes with a lot of our brothers and sisters who've been disenfranchised. Don't get it, that's not how they look at making mistakes. It's usually punitive when they make mistakes. So it's a different kind of culture in Isaiah that actually gives me, as the organizer, the confidence to go out and take risk and find out what are some things that people need. And it actually allows me now to pass those teachings on to brothers and sisters who are in those barbershops, so they can start to imagine themselves at the center of the community and leading in the community in a positive and productive way.
So, and it was interesting because earlier this week, I got a chance to talk with the NA CDI about Native American voting, the restoring of voting rights for felons in the state of Minnesota. And one of the things which it became very clear as I was having this conversation is this was a way, by restricting this, that people that might have gone to jail, served their time, been released, preventing them from being able to vote was a way for people to manipulate the voting cycle, particularly to discriminate against minority populations and prevent them from voting mass, considering the unfair level of incarceration for minority populations. And this, you know, when you're talking about 55,000 people just got that back their right to vote, I mean, that really was a substantial part of that was the minority communities who were, frankly, underrepresented when it comes to the ballot box.
Yes. And so, so it's both. It's true that there's disproportionate numbers when it comes to the minority communities in the state of Minnesota who are incarcerated. But a lot of that 55,000, too, are people who live and reside in greater Minnesota. A lot of my white brothers and sisters are part of that group. What's really important, though, is that this state has made a declaration that all of us need to be included, that, you know, nobody, when you've done your time, when you get out of jail, if we're saying that you are now welcome to society, then we need to act in what we're saying. The number two thing, the reason why it's so impactful, too, is that it actually, you can look at, there's been some studies in other states around recidivism. When people are civically engaged and they're part of, like, constructive community leadership, it actually brings down the percentage of recidivism. People start to see society as their own, and they're ready to own it. The third thing that's really important, it kind of dismantles the misinformation that's out there. There's a lot of brothers and sisters such as me, Matt, who made some mistakes early in my life, was incarcerated, and I thought for the next 10 years that I wasn't able to vote because of this mistake. And it wasn't until I actually moved up to Minnesota to understand that I could have been voted 10 years ago. So it's just, it was a very, very impactful structural change. And on top of that, when you talk about 16, 17 years old, being able to, you know, register to vote, how do you actually get them in the practice of utilizing their voices in society? It's just, you know, it's transformative. So, yes. Absolutely.
And when we look at the 55,000 are now have got their voting rights back again, I'm going to presume that a stunning amount of them because of this, that civic ability to engage in the process, that there is going to be a pretty large turnout with that group when it comes to elections. Because as you said, I think when you engage, when people make mistakes, but when they are welcomed back in within the community and they're allowed to be part of the community and have a say in the community, that's the path to complete recovery on that, right?
Absolutely. I mean, your imagination starts to soar. If you get out of jail, you've done your time, and you are working, you're a productive citizen, but you still can't utilize your voice, and a lot of our brothers and sisters that are in jail are very informed politically. So when you get out, you mean to tell me I can't utilize my voice, then how can they actually see society as their own? It's kind of hard. It's a contradiction. So this actually allows people to think about, like, man, what can I do now as I can utilize my voice? I got my own set of experiences that I actually want to express. There's some things I want to speak up for. There's some things I want my neighbors to know about my experience and see if they actually share the same experiences and if they want to go and build partnerships with legislators or people who represent them and their interests. All of these different things start to hatch out when society says you are included and we value you and we see you and we're going to encourage you to use your voice. So it's always a productive thing, and I'm just so appreciative to be part of that process.
Sure. One of the other major issues with voting, the pre-registration of 16 and 17 year olds, you talk about building up enthusiasm about this. You know, I've got Generation Zers at my house, and they are all, you know, chomping at the bit to vote. You know, now that two of them can, their third one's going to be already wanting, can't wait for their time to do so. Having the pre-registration to vote, so the 16 and 17 year olds will be already registered to vote in the state of Minnesota. That's another great way to A, make sure everyone's represented, but as B, build up that excitement about you're going to be able to participate in the process.
Look, the youth are our future. We've heard this in songs. We've heard people say this forever. It is true. And the one thing we have to do is invest in our youth. And another thing we have to do is make it very legible that we value our youth. And what better practice to actually start enrolling our youth in and to actually submitting their vote in their interest using their voices? It is critical. And when I'm thinking about it, too, I'm thinking about all of our children. But I am also, too, very passionate about children who've been told they don't have a voice. Children who have been taught through narrative and messaging that their voices just don't matter because their community is disenfranchised. So I didn't have a political imagination until I was almost 40 years old. So this is another step. It's not the answer to all of these inequities and disparities, but it is it's a very solid step towards letting our youth know we care about you, we see you, we value you, and we know you are the future leaders. So you know what? It's time to get into rhythm. Make sure you register. Make sure you're voting. And then start practicing and getting the sophomores and freshmen ready to be able to take the same practice. That's how you build a multiracial, thriving democracy in the state of Minnesota and ultimately the country.
Brian Fullman joining us from Isaiah, talking about the restoring of voting rights and encouraging more voting in this country. Let's also just, if I can, for you, looking at the slate of things that got passed, which was truly remarkable. The DFL really kind of delivered on a lot of levels in this spring here. What are one or two of the other ones that you just say to yourself, you know, this is going to do a lot of good across the state of Minnesota?
Oh, man, paid family medical leave.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yep.
Right? If you're working hard, you should have some security as somebody who works every day. You deserve that. It's actually your right to. So that was very transformative. And I can actually connect that to just people who are voting. We want stability for people. We want people to understand when you get sick, when you have bereavement, when you need to take care of your family, we got you. We're going to make sure that you're financially stable to be able to take care of yourself and your family. That says a lot as the state of Minnesota. And I also think like the bills that we passed around climate, like this is really important. Making sure that we have somewhere for our kids. I have a grandchild. I just had a grandchild 2 years ago. And I'm looking at this boy, and I'm saying, man, we have to leave this world in a better place. And if we do not start activating ourselves around that, it won't be a better place. But because these bills have passed in the state of Minnesota, it's not just good for Minnesota. It's an example to the rest of the country. That progressive movement is here. We're thinking about everybody who lives in the state of Minnesota, and we're going to deliver on that. So those are two bills that I thought were really transformative and opens up more for imagination about what we can do, you know, moving down the line with these bills already passing into law.
Then on the other side of that, let's talk about one thing that you want that hasn't been addressed yet that you say, you know what, you guys need to get this done.
I think we've done a lot around criminal justice reform, but I want to see some departments that are really established and developed to actually start to concentrate on gun violence, that really specifically are concentrating on gun violence so we can we have to dismantle this kind of activity. But I think, it's going to take all of us, and it's going to take the department that has the funding and the resources to be able to start addressing this issue. And it's showing up in different ways and geographically throughout the state. And so I think if we can, there was some traction around it, but we got some more work to do moving forward around the gun violence that is happening across the state and making sure that we have a clear department that can oversee the activities and operations and, dismantling that kind of activity. That's what I want to see.
And I have been one of the people that have said that I really want – I think that the people that are selling the guns illegally, if you all of a sudden put out some harsher penalties for those people that are the ones that are buying them, generally buying them in outstate, rural parts of the state, and then bringing them in and selling them in the cities where they're being used for these violent activities, if you started putting much more harsher penalties on the people who are supplying the guns, I guarantee you're going to start drying up the supply real fast.
That's right. And I believe there's already been some movement around that from Attorney General Keith Ellison has already started to have some traction around that, but you're absolutely right. How do we stop it from just pouring into our communities and our neighborhoods? And at the same time, how are we educating our communities about guns and the responsibility you got to have when it comes to guns, right? Like, how can we have conflict resolution where it doesn't have to go to the extremities of like using your gun? So there's a lot of different organizing paths and strategies and layers that we have to unpack when it comes to this kind of issue. But you're absolutely right. One of the major steps that has to happen is the flooding of these weapons in our community, you know, just constantly, consistently over the years. So we can catch them, we can catch these wholesalers and the way they're setting up these gun shops, like these kind of gun shows, these gun shows, if we can actually start to like slow down that activity, that takes a big chunk of the issue away from us. Yeah.
People are making money off gun violence, and that's where you have to make that stop. Brian Fullman, lead organizer with Barbershops Black Congregations over at Isaiah. Brian, anytime you want to come back, my friend, you are more than welcome back on my show. This is fantastic.
Well, I appreciate you, and I definitely want to come back, so we'll set it up.
All right, my pleasure. Thank you very much. Brian Fullman with Isaiah, kind enough to join us today. We'll take a break. I'm going to unpack one or two things he said when I come back. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
Vacuum cleaner. You buy them, you break them, and then you throw them away, right? Well, if you're ready to break out of that vicious cycle, we have the answer. Never heard of A1 Vacuum? They've been around forever, offering better alternatives. So if you're ready to stop filling the landfills, give A1 Vacuum a shot. Located in Roseville and ready to show you something better. Find them at a-1vacuum.com or call 651-222-6316. Better yet, drop by.
Hey Twin Cities, it's Latunji from Latunji's Palette. Get ready for an unforgettable day of celebration at the 5-year anniversary of Latunji's Palette and the Elliott Park Block Party. It's happening on Saturday, August 12th from 12 noon to 5 p.m. We want you to head on over to the 1400 block of Grant Avenue and Park Avenue for a fun Saturday afternoon celebration. We'll have free food, gourmet desserts, and refreshing drinks to keep you satisfied. But that's not all. We want you to prepare to be blown away by our lineup of live entertainment featuring Joe Davis, Tanya Hughes, Desdemona, and yours truly, Latunji, and more. Plus, we'll have a special appearance from WCCO's Shayla Reeves, and we have special vendor rates for anyone looking to help their business or nonprofit gain more visibility. For more info on that, 612-382-2021. That's the 5-year anniversary of Latunji's Palette and the Elliott Park Block Party, Saturday, August 12th from noon to 5. Details at latunjispalette.com.
Hi, Matt McNeil for Rudy Luther Toyota. You've heard me talk about the Rudy Luther Toyota We Buy program. Now hear from someone who's actually done it, me. our kids' car, the 2006 Toyota Sienna, served us well for 17 years, but it was finally time to say goodbye. The We Buy program is really simple. I gave them some basic information, we set up an appointment, and after a quick verification, they gave me an estimate and a check, and they made me a generous offer. It was that fast. See for yourself. Try the Rudy Luther Toyota We Buy program at RudyLutherToyota.com. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. And don't fool yourself. And first of all, Brian was fantastic. Gosh, easy conversations. I love them when I get easy interviews. Great stuff, great information, and great points across the board. I 100% correct. The 55,000 felons who just had their voting rights restored in the state of Minnesota. The thing that's across the state. That's, you know, people up in Ward. It's people down in Albert Lea. It's all across the state, and that's fantastic. But it's clear to me, considering especially the disproportionate amount of minority communities that are in jail, incarcerated, and make up the felon rolls, that this was, and this is still going on in a lot of states, a way for the white population to basically, get rid of minority votes, which generally do not go their way. And so I think that is, I'm glad we're not shy from dealing with that. And, if you notice that Republicans basically, there's nowhere for them to go on that issue. Well, we don't want them to be able to vote. That's voting is a right, and if it's a very hard thing to do. You're not going to be able to get that passed by sitting there and saying, "Oh, well, yeah, we're going to reinstall this ban." It's going to clearly show that who they are. And I think that should be questions. Now, by the way, I should mention this. When it comes to asking Republican questions when they're getting into an election season, you can't trust them. They all say they're all for abortion rights now. Bull crud. Bull. They are not. Anyway, the other thing which he said when he talked about paid family leave and sick pay and how huge that is. So this last weekend, the lost weekend that I had going around, I went to a restaurant. I'm not going to say where. I'm not going to say which one. But I went to a restaurant. I am there waiting in line to get food. And it was clear one of the three people that were working the counter was not well. Not well at all. Ashen, waxy looking. She was not doing well. And the place I was at, it took a little time to get through the line. And there was this person who was managing that area who was trying to get their bosses to authorize her to go home. And quite literally, they were ignoring her. And, she is saying, "This person is very sick. They need to go home." And nothing was being said. So she basically yelled it across the restaurant, right in front of all the customers, to which one of the managers comes over. "Hey, you're really not feeling you're not feeling well? Oh, I didn't hear about that. Oh, of course you could go home." Well played. Well played. I want to give that person a round of applause because that was well played. Because, what are you going to do? Are you going to, fire the manager that basically, was calling you out on this? I think it is, you are a fool if you think when Republicans sit there and say, "You don't need to do this. If you're sick, you could just stay home." That's Republicans. Republicans know that those same managers are like, "Where are you? I don't care if you're sick. You got to get in here or else you're fired." And they have no problem with that. And so it's always the business rights over the employees' rights. And we have changed that. And frankly, I think we all can agree if someone is sick, I don't want them necessarily touching the food. I'm good with the person taking the day. And if you have a sign out there that says, "You know what? We're short-staffed today. We had someone get sick. Please be patient. No problem. As a matter of fact, I'll respect you a lot more by saying, you know what? It's going to be a little bit longer, but we're short-staffed. No problem. I'll wait my time. But come on, man. Yeah, it's this sick leave thing, it's going to be a much better benefit to a lot of people out there. Hour two, that's coming up next.
AM 950 Radio is celebrating Minnesota Broadcasters Week of Kindness by highlighting organizations that work tirelessly to strengthen our democracy. This week, we shine a spotlight on the Native American Community Development Institute and their project, Make Voting a Tradition, or MVAT. MVAT is a community-focused, people-powered change initiative working to increase voter participation in the American Indian community. MVAT provides political and environmental information in the form of readily accessible resources. The goal is to ensure that our community members know that their voice and vote can create change. They build voter turnout by collaborating with talented artists and influencers to create both fun and compelling content focused on critical issues that matter to Indian country. MVAT mobilizes on a state level to engage all Minnesota tribal nations. By supporting organizations like NACTI and Make Voting a Tradition, together we can create a brighter future for all.
You're listening to WLAK 1260 AM Amory and WBZH 910 AM W245 CT Hayward. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC.